It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Central Standard Time from Phoenix, Arizona at Freedoms, with an S, freedomsphoenix.com studios. And today we got a special show for you, and I want to make sure we take the time to, everybody gets to understand everybody. You know, because my thing is, you don't got to agree with me. That's not government will help you do that. but you do need to understand. You know, we understand each other's perspective, and then you know what we start to find out? We find out just how much, we overlap. And but, a lot of times in the news, it's not about what you report. It's about what you don't report. You know, and we're going to try and bypass a lot of this stuff because our special guest today is Heidi Berich. Now, Heidi is she's a director at the Southern Law Poverty Center for Special Projects. And I get to be a special project today. Hello, Heidi. I got you there.
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. You know, you were here in Phoenix a week or two before Obama came that time, right?
I was there on August 12th, so I think it was about a week before.
You know, my board op, Jet Lacy, the big bald guy that interviewed you, he's my board op.
Oh, really? Who interviewed me for TV or
Freedom's Phoenix? Yeah, they had video camera doing there.
I talked to somebody about the MIAC report and those kinds of things.
Right.
That's probably what it is. Yeah.
Right.
So, happened with the video?
They forgot to push the button.
No.
They didn't get any of the video.
I was wondering why it didn't show up so
I know. It would have been great. And I go, what happened? And an experienced videographer, he goes, I had it backwards and I pushed it at the wrong time. It was on pause the whole time. So, we were so hosed. So it's good that you came on. I mean, that's what happens. You get a lot of advantages in YouTube and amateurs, and then sometimes you don't. Now, the thing is that he did want to make sure he got in something about mission creep, okay? And what he was talking about here, what was it? Oh, yeah. This is a short segment. We only got about a minute here, and then we'll come back after the break. But, there's a lot of inconsistencies. But first, I need to know what Southern Law Poverty Center is, their mission. I mean, when did they start? Who are they affiliated with? What do you see as your job title? What is of importance to you? And I'll give you a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's a lot to cover, but I'll do my best. The Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC, was founded in 1971. In its first decade, for the most part, the Law Center engaged in lawsuits based on civil rights cases. So, for example, they sued the YMCA, where I work out, because it wouldn't allow black members. They sued to desegregate the state troopers, cases in that vein, right, to end segregation, basically.
Wait. I got to ask you a question right there. You said what year did it start?
71,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a libertarian guy, so, you might understand, may not agree, but understand from my perspective, this First Amendment right of association, any libertarian will say, anything to do with they took my tax money, government, kind of everybody equal under the law, and, there is no, white parks or any of that crap, or schools or any of that stuff. Of course, we wouldn't have public funded schools, but that's another thing. The thing is that I want to make sure when we come back, we talk about, is it the role of government to force private property owners and businesses with who they can and cannot or must or serve? And that, that's an interesting conversation. And at the core of a lot of this stuff, First Amendment right association, and where's the force of government applied? Well, we're going to talk about it when we come back with Heidi Berich from the Southern Law Poverty Center in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, here from Phoenix, Arizona, freedomsphoenix.com studios. And you can declare your independence, too. And you don't even need a government form. Well, we're online with Heidi Byrick. Now, is that how you're supposed to say it, Heidi?
That is right, but you're fine. Doesn't matter. The name's difficult.
Okay, so Heidi right. Byrick, you know, Jet remembered from when you were here. He goes, no, it's Byrick. And he goes, it's a Southern Poverty Law Center, not the Southern Law Poverty Center. So
minor issues.
Well, you know, it's important. I mean, maybe that Southern Law thing was a Freudian thing, you know? They got their own special little laws. You know, the so I want to dwell on this one point in this segment. Is that, you know, where does the government, certainly the federal government, end? I mean, you know, here we have a First Amendment right of association. I was a restaurant owner for years. And, you know, while I'm, you know, I accept any money, I, you know, had Hispanic employees of, you know, dubious citizenship. You know, I had, you know, Hispanic customers. I was in a neighborhood that was mixed. So not an issue, but I would never have advocated that the government would force people to let anybody in. You know, I'm like, if you have to be black with a gun and frost-tipped hair to come into my restaurant, I reserve the right to set that standard. The thing is that we've using government now, and the Southern Poverty Law Center has been at the tip of this a lot of times, saying, no, we need to go to private businesses that would discriminate against people instead of boycotting or, you know, doing kind of like we would for the pro-life movement kind of thing and get your opinion known. No, we're going to force them to associate. And I just, you know, and that's what's happening. So I just want to give you an opportunity to address that. Is that the proper role? Is that what you're doing? I'm wondering how you justify it.
Yeah, well, obviously you would disagree because you really don't like the federal government. But I mean,
you are correct.
I know. But in a case like the state troopers, those are government jobs that should be available to
absolutely.
All citizens.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely, I think that it's appropriate.
You know, let me give you a good point on that. In Connecticut, a few years ago, they didn't hire someone, had nothing to do with race, but he sued them. He goes, wait a minute, all the testing, everything I passed, I did better. And they said, you know what the criteria is? If you are too smart, if you test too high IQ, if you're too intelligent, we find you not to be good law enforcement officers, so we don't hire them. Good information
well,
we need to know.
Law enforcement wouldn't be very happy with that.
You know, that's information we need to know.
But I'm just saying that the government... Government positions and whatnot have to be available to all citizens regardless.
Just not smart people.
Skin color. Well, I mean, I'd have to see the proof in the pudding on that one.
Oh, no, Connecticut, you know, look it up. I tell you, this is, you know, we don't make this stuff up. We just report it. So,
okay, well, Ernest, you have to give me a chance here to ask my own questions, too. You promised.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. But I want you to answer that. See, government does set their own criteria. I don't agree with that, okay? But the thing is, I'm going, okay, government, not government. I'm talking Joe Schmo Hardware Store says only black people can come in my store.
Yeah, well, I would be against that.
Well,
too.
Of course, but do you use government?
I am a person who supports the civil rights laws. I believe that government was used to, I don't believe it. This is a fact. Government was used to oppress minorities, particularly black people, both in slavery and Jim Crow. It was used to take their rights away, to impoverish them, to brutalize them. They weren't protected by law enforcement.
Disarm them.
They were killed in the streets. Government did that, and government had to undo that. And that's what I see the Civil Rights Act and the results of the Civil Rights Act as having been.
Do you include firearms in that, though? You know, see, the reason that you
have
a lot of... They disarmed black people so the KKK could lynch them. That was the whole thing. You had to go to the sheriff to get permission to defend yourself.
They didn't disarm them. They would never have allowed them to be armed in the first place, right?
I mean, that's kind of my point.
You're a slave. You're not going to get a gun, right?
That's the same thing. Well, they started gun control. It was never even, you know, an issue until after the Civil War. And they go, we got these freed blacks. We don't want them to have guns.
It's part of oppression. And let me say on the gun front, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there about the Southern Poverty Law Center's views on guns, is we don't have a gun control position, period. there's always people attacking us as though we're involved in some kind of anti-gun cabal, and it's just it's absolutely false. So I want to say that straight.
Good.
All right, so Ernest,
arm the black
let
people.
Me ask a question? You gonna let me ask a question?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, tell me about the Jekyll Island project and why you were involved in it.
The Bob Schultz wants to do the Continental Congress 2009. He really pushes that he wants to have three people from each state to go and I'm not really sure what. And what was interesting is that Adam Kokesh, he's a rising star in the freedom movement and a congressional candidate in out of Santa Fe. He and I were, I think we were probably the only ones that didn't sign their declarations and we didn't, agree with them wholeheartedly. I mean, we made friends with a lot of these guys, we kind of overlap in a lot of our freedom issues. But they were very adamant about us going. And I said, yeah, you don't really want me because I'm not, you may think it, I'd be a moderate compared to them, but they weren't, stringent enough as far as I was concerned because they're trying to marry the Declaration of Independence as it's part of the same thing as the Constitution. And from my perspective, it's not. The Declaration of Independence was very clear. They didn't say what kind of government, but we just know when it's bad. When it's oppressing the rights of individuals, they're bad. Okay.
Right.
They want to have this Continental Congress, which is what it was called that created the Declaration of Independence, in support of this Constitution thing, which I viewed as an anti-revolution. It was kind of, nobody even talks about the 10 presidents we had under Articles of Confederation. So we go to this Constitution. It was all about the power, the power, the power. You get Patrick Henry up there and Thomas Paine and Jefferson, these guys. Patrick Henry, as governor, for 4 hours is arguing to the state legislature not to ratify the Constitution. That's how we got the Bill of Rights. It was limits on the government. So my thing is with them, and I go there and I express myself. They have video of it. We interviewed people. I covered the whole thing. Nice with these guys. I made new friends. I know a lot of them. And I said, look, I am not in support of what you guys want. If you're going to leave it open, you want to have this Continental Congress, and everybody gets to say what they want, and everybody, can I vote none of the above? I want even the option of just going back to states' rights and none of the above. So if you don't have that option, then I don't really get to have my full say. So that's why I'm probably not going to be heavily involved other than just reporting on what they're doing. But you have to see from their perspective, though, they are really pushing the Jekyll Island thing. The only reason they went to Jekyll Island was to try and get, this national coverage, a lot of attention, because that's where they did the Federal Reserve and everything. And they had this gathering, and it was a lot of, pomp and circumstance that was surrounding a romanticized version of the founding of the Constitution. And they had speeches, and people were dressed in costume, and they, did skits and so on. It was all appealing to an older generation, the people that are in their 60s, 70s, kind of that have this patriotic, version of what America was, and we're going to, get back to the Constitution and fix it. When you have a libertarian like me going, heck, the Constitution is how they screwed us. what happens when you got, an executive, a legislative, and judicial lined up against the rights of the individual? You find yourself in a free speech zone. That's what happens. So I'm going, this is not, this plantation they put us on is not the solution. Quit trying to just argue about who's going to wear the ring of power. It's the ring that's the problem. I'm like, they're always, we need to get conservatives in there to rule us. And can we not be ruled? Can I vote for that? If I got to vote. So that's where we're different. But I have you on. I was on Air America, last week doing Malloy's show with Friedman. I know all these guys. I was talk show host on Air America for years as their token libertarian. I can talk to anybody, okay? So the thing is, I'm going, I just want you to understand me. You don't have to agree with me, but I need the same thing from you. I want to understand why you have a problem with these guys that did the Jekyll Island, them wanting to have this Continental Congress of people. It's not binding. What are they going to do? They're going to come out and say, we decided you guys are bad and you have to move out of the White House and everything now and we're going to be in charge. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, I don't have a problem with them. I was interested I'm interested in Bob Schultz. He's held a lot of events that we've covered that have featured, I can think of one in 2004 that I actually attended, that featured a guy who's extremely anti-Semitic, and so the extremist that we track for our hate list is probably what we're best known to. I hadn't gotten to that yet in the description of the Law Center.
Heck, I've been on your hate list.
No, you weren't on the hate list.
Heck,
you were
on
the Patriot. You were on the Patriot list.
Well, there's a
which
difference.
I think that you would like.
there's a difference. You know, the one thing a lot of people, you know, that I should know more about the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I'm just have to raise my hand and ask, you know, am I allowed not to care? You know, I just there's another, you know, they're all out there doing whatever. You know, I you're allowed to your opinion. You're allowed to do. I think you're mistaken using government force to try and socially and economically engineer people. But you know, maybe it's for the right reasons. And then I have to ask, where does your support come from? You know, because
sure.
A lot of times you guys are linked a lot with the Anti-Defamation League.
Well, I mean, we don't have any
relationship
with the ADL. I mean, it's not that I don't know people at the ADL, right? And they don't do some of the same kind of work that we do. They do. But we don't have any official relationship with them at all. The way that we get our support, we don't get any money from government, period.
Well, amen there.
We have... I don't know the exact number right now, but maybe 200,000 to 300,000 donors, individuals, who give us money, and we get a little bit of foundation money, but the bulk of our budget is covered by individual donations. So, you know, so there it is, right? They support the work that we do, and they like what we're doing, and so they give us money to
do it. That's the same thing with the revolution here, you know, the love-olution. You know, but you always have those top 10, 20. Without them, you know, your 200,000 don't mean squat.
Actually, in our case, you are right in general. You really are. But in our case, it's not true. Our average donation is actually very, very small. And because we haven't had a major donor program and haven't had a foundation program, we aren't in that situation. That's not to say that our fundraising might change over time, and we might be, but we're not right now.
Very good, very good. Well, we're getting into it. We're getting some information. We'll go ahead and be right back here on Declare Your Independence with Heidi Byrick in just a little bit from Southern Poverty Law Center.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. It's me, Ernest Hancock, and I have on the phone, she's Director of Research and Special Projects. I get to be a special project today from the Southern Poverty Law Center in Montgomery, Alabama, Heidi Byrick. Now, Heidi, I want to make sure that we get on, you know, the mission. I'll tell you why. Instead of just building up to it and dumping it on you, I'll just tell you, you know, what my concern is. This morning I get up, and I get a lot of emails, I'm sure you do, and people are reporting and put stuff on the site and blah, blah, blah. And I get this one, and it says, tape shows beating on bus of Belleville West student. This is in St. Louis. St. Louis, it's showing a video camera going back to the bus, just came out today. Black students, males, are just beating the living crap out of a white. He gets on, sits down, only seat available. They didn't want him there, so they just pound the living snot out of him.
That's horrible.
They finally stop it. 5 minutes later, they start pounding on him again. And I'm like, you know, another argument against public schools. But the point is that, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, do you guys even take a position on something like that? Or, you know, let me give you another one. You know, it's a Black Panther thing when they're intimidating voters going to the voting thing, you know, and then they drop charges on that. You know, it's like I need the ACLU out there defending Nazi kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, listen, I think that people think wrongly that for some reason we only write about white supremacist groups and we only write about hate crimes if the victims are, for example, Jews or African Americans, and it's not true. We have written a major story about ethnic cleansing in L.A., those terms were in there, by Latino gangs against African Americans. We have written about Black hate crime attacks, and some very egregious ones. The one that you're describing sounds like it's in that vein. We've written an entire story about hate crimes against whites and sort of other combinations of minorities, right? Not the what people traditionally think of, which is white people beating up basically a black person, right?
Well, white people are going to be a minority here pretty quick. We're going to need your help, man.
Well, we're all going to be minorities is the truth. So, you know, we take... Hate crime is hate crime. It doesn't matter what the race of the perpetrator and the victim is. It's a bad thing regardless, and that's our position.
Okay, now define for me hate. See, I'm crime's a crime. I mean, you know, blood-drawn crime. You know, why you did it, I couldn't possibly care less. It's crime. You know, you have someone's life, liberty, property was violated, and why you did it, I don't care. So,
well, we do care.
Why?
Because
that's what I want to ask. Why?
Hold on, Ernest. You know we care. Why do we have premeditated murder? We already do this in the law. It makes a difference when you kill someone whether you planned to kill them, thought about it beforehand, or whether you didn't. This is a standard part of the law, and in the hate crime case, which is what you're asking about, right?
No, they go into motivation. You got motivation, opportunity, that kind of stuff. And I can see you motivate. You go to the jury and you say, yeah, well, why would he do that? Well, because of this, because he was black, because he, you know, had a mustache. I mean, you know, whatever the reason was.
What I'm saying is hate crime.
But it doesn't add
day.
On to the sentence.
Yeah, I mean, they add on to the penalties.
I know they do now. That's my point.
Well, you know, that's the same thing, though, with first-degree and second-degree murder. These are about sentencing issues. We look at motivation, what people are thinking, why, how they did something to determine the crime. So anyways, I know you disagree with this, but in terms of hate crimes, our position is that these are crimes against communities. They have an impact larger than the event itself. Like, for example, white students in the area you were describing are probably now going to feel terrorized. And you know, that's our argument whether you like it or not. Now, let me answer your other question about the new Black Panther Party.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been getting a lot of people writing in sort of like, why haven't you taken a position on this? You know, you're always beating up on whites and you never say anything about these terrible black people, right? And the truth is that we list the new Black Panther Party on our hate list because they're anti-Semitic and they're anti-white. We have written a full expose of their heinous views that we ran in our publication called The Intelligence Report, and that was quite a while ago before anybody had even picked up on who these folks are. We have fully and clearly stated that they are a vile organization. We didn't write about the voting rights case, but it wasn't because we were somehow protecting, you know, the Obama's Justice Department or protecting the new Black Panther Party. We just didn't do it. I don't know why. So now we've gone back and revisited it and written a blog post about the fact that they're relooking into the case.
That, you know, that'd be a good thing to do. You know, there's
so
many.
So it's not like, I just don't want people to think that somehow we were like, you know, saying, hey, it's cool if the new Black Panther Party does voter intimidation.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question, you know, make a statement, ask a question, and 3-minute break because we're coming up close.
Okay.
I don't want you to try and squeeze it in. But here in the Valley, I've been on the air for a while now, since February of 2003, before we went into Iraq. Well, one of the issues was the first station I was at was owned by a Jewish owner. And he was real adamant about, you know, you got to get, you know, the Zionist Israel, pro-Israel guy to absolutely bring the boys on. So I have the VP of the Zionist of America guy. He's an attorney here in Scottsdale. Had him on a few times. You know, he's been on other shows I produced, and just let him go, man. Have your say, just like we're talking. And what happened was, is it comes down to, okay, now, I have a government that's putting a gun to my head to take my money and redistribute it to all of these other countries through the State Department, and they'll go on all doing it to, you know, Syria and Egypt and whatever. And that's all bad, but Israel's okay. Okay, what is your principle? What is the definition? If you oppose that, then you're going, well, you're being anti-Semitic. And I'm like, all right, so time out. First off, consider me somebody, because I am somebody, that doesn't know what the heck you're talking about. Define anti-Semitic to me, and then how that applies to these other groups. And I just want to know what your definition is, so we know what we're talking about.
Well, I can't speak to the foreign policy business that you were bringing up. It's way outside of my bailiwick, right? But for me, anti-Semitism is hatred of Jews that is reflected in things like Hitlerian dialogue, right? All the Jews should be killed, right? Jews run the financial cities, like crazy conspiracy theories about them. That's what I think of as anti-Semitism. I don't have a clue what this Zionist character had to say about that.
I don't know. I'm on your side, probably. You know, well, we'll get right back, because I do want to follow up on that. We'll be back just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Here in the saddle again on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, my very special guest, Heidi Byrick from the Southern Poverty Law Center in Montgomery, Alabama. Now, she is the, you know, head of research and special projects. I get to be a special project. I'm very happy to do that. And we're talking about, Heidi, my question of, you know, it generally goes around, you know, what is this anti-Semitic thing? And you here on RBN, John Stattmiller, I met at several times over the last couple of years at various different, you know, Revolution, Ron Paul Revolution events. and he was in Jekyll Island and so on, and that's how our show is broadcast on their network, and we're adding other networks and such at the end of the month. So it's but he and his listeners and other people, they come up and they say, you know, this Zionist thing is not the same as, you know, being anti-Jew. There is a they want to make it very clear that you got to hammer on the fact that there is a philosophy that, you know, fill in the blank. And the bottom line, I tell you where we overlap on this, is they're going to use State Department money to buy congressmen to get them more State Department money. And I'm going, you know, can we stop that? So are you for the foreign policy that is money going to Israel from the American taxpayer or anybody else?
Ernest, you're not going to be satisfied with my answer. I can't speak to this. This is not something that's in our bailiwick. It's not.
Okay, so no, I understand. That's fine. No, you can say you don't know. You can say you don't know.
You know, I don't. What I can say is I don't believe, and nobody here at the Southern Poverty Law Center believes, that people who are critical of some Israel, you know, various Israeli policies are anti-Semites. We don't believe that.
Okay. If I don't want them taking my money and you call me anti-Semitic because I don't want Israel taking my money, then you're kind of, you know, you're off the mark.
Well, then I'd be a hypocrite. Okay, now you've got to let me ask a question. Or
absolutely.
I've answered a bunch. So we wrote a report recently that you might have read or maybe didn't read about sort of revitalization of the what we see as the militia movement, more militia groups doing paramilitary training, patriot groups coming out of the woodwork.
I haven't read it, but I bet I could write it for
you. I'm giving you the gist of it. And I'm just, what do you think? Do you think that's true? And if you do think that's true, because I certainly see more of this activity.
No, you see more of it on TV.
And why?
Because the TV reports it. There's always a guy with a camel floppy hat and the one tooth that they go up and, you know, he does his Bubba speech.
Oh, I don't think these people are Bubbas.
No, they find them. They create them. That's the only guy. I guarantee you this, Heidi, it'd be an interesting experiment. You know, if we went to one of these rallies and so on, and I just put on a camo shirt, you know, I'd have all the attention.
Well, because, so you don't believe that there's been a revitalization in the Patriots?
It never left.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. Can you talk to me about that?
Very simple. There's an entire, and it's more now. I mean, these young kids are starting to, they're growing up, understand. I tell you, I was years over at Air America during the Bush administration. All of a sudden, even Randy Rhodes is going on, yeah, I got my little 38. You know, they all of a sudden, under the Bush administration, they had elimination of habeas corpus, and they just, you know, this enemy combatant and throwing you in the hoosegow for whatever. All of a sudden, the left started going, you know, maybe that Second Amendment wasn't about duck hunting. You know, they're starting to understand that there was about defending of yourself and your rights and your family and against a tyrannical government. So now, as you know, Obama gets in, he continues the exact same policy. Heck, he keeps the same Secretary of Defense. You have this corporate welfare thing gone amok, and it's just a continuation of expanding the war in Afghanistan. He goes to another country, Pakistan, and you have all these people that were supportive of him, and they're going, I think we were lied to. So for a 23-year-old to all of a sudden start to see the benefit of having an AR-15, you know, it's not a big giant stretch. So when you have, just in the months of February and March, each month had more guns sold in America than the entire Chinese and Indian army combined. So from your perspective, you're going, oh my goodness, what's happening? And I'm looking at it going, what'd you think was going to happen?
Well, let me ask you this, because I think that this is an interesting point you're making. Why, given what you just said, that Bush was, you know, he's throwing American citizens into gulags, right?
Absolutely, scumbag.
Why did the gun sales explode only when it looked like Obama was going to win? I mean, why didn't it happen?
Because Bush was not, he was under the rhetoric in this, and I'm sure he had his own problems, but he was under the rhetoric that they weren't going to take guns. You know, Dick Cheney, yeah, I even shoot my friends in the face. So these guys were not seen as taking of guns. I bought my first AR-15 the weekend before the election. It went up about a third in price 3 days later.
but you understand what I'm saying about the irony, right? I mean, Bush is the one who really threw people in gulags and took their rights in an extreme manner, right?
And Obama didn't stop
it. But nobody cared about the
guns. Oh, we cared. The left cared.
You just said the ammo sales are out of control. No. There's got to be something about Obama. It's got to be more than just this perception of rights being taken.
Well, as a matter of fact, just today, there was a story I put up that has, see, lobbyist exposes Obama's true views on Second Amendment. And this was on from lewrockwell.com, very respected site. And this was from the lobbyist in Illinois, that of all of his votes and amendments and everything on anything to do with guns. I haven't read it, but, you know, of course, you want to put it up. And I would imagine that he's been very supportive of having some type of gun control. And I would imagine it'd probably be a lot. So people ask me, I'm on the air in these kind of conversations, they go, well, do you really think Obama's trying to take away your guns? And I'm like, you know, if he won't, I don't think he's going to be real upset if, you know, I didn't have him. I mean, or he has legislation that comes on his desk. What's he going to do? I just, you know, heck, you had the Brady bill was done by Republicans, you know, so I'm just, I really, and the NRA was right
so
behind
you think
it. And,
really, you really think what it is fueling sort of a, let's say if it's a revitalization of the movement, you just think it's fears of gun control.
Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't buy my first gun. I'll give you an example. 1994, we did an initiative to allow for unrestricted concealed carry, because that's the way our Constitution is anyway.
With SAFE, is that the organization
right.
you were
with? Second Amendment is for everyone. Well, what happened was, in 94, because that's the PAC, the Political Action Committee, that was created around it, all of a sudden I find myself on, you know, Southern Poverty Law Center list that they put out, and then it went to all the sheriffs. I get Sheriff Arpaio calling me and saying, you're on top of the list, man. I'm like, woohoo. So I started getting all kinds of interviews. I had German television crews and Japanese and South Korean and everybody and their grandmother across
the
country.
We made you famous,
yes,
Ernest.
You did. So I'm going like this. I'm going, wow, is it that simple? And the people they go after, and this Viper militia thing that they did in the late
90s. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, what you thought about that.
Oh, one of them was a good friend of mine. We did a thing called Viper Reserve, and we got all the information out. We documented all the stuff that Napolitano, as prosecuting attorney, did that was really shady. Even Ted Koppel on Nightline comes out and goes, you know, this isn't what they said it was. They weren't even charged with the crimes that they were touting in the media. They were convicted of conspiring to teach. You know, I'm just going, wow, this is so made up. Now we're looking at William Kostrick brings a sidearm to New Hampshire. And what the same people are amping up the same rhetoric. We got to go to Arizona. Then you came, you know, and did your hate crime thing down in the city of Phoenix that Jet went to. And then you had that. Then you have Janet Napolitano is now head of Homeland Security. You have Hillary Clinton, now Secretary of State, going over to China, please buy our debt, which was the same motivation they had in the 90s for this, for Japan and West Germany to buy the debt. And we got all our plantation, you know, employees under control here. You know, we're disarming kind of thing. You can invest in our debt. You know, this read my lips, no new taxes thing that Bush did, it got them to where the people started rising up and these foreigners go, hey man, American people already did this revolution thing once. You think you can just keep taxing them? Heck, you're a gazillion times more than what they revolted over last time. So they had to give them the idea, no, you can still safe to invest in our debt. So now they're in the exact same position. Rahm Emanuel was Clinton's senior advisor from 93 to 98. He was big time part of this rhetoric. Janet Napolitano and Reno and all this, same people. Now Kostrick does this in New Hampshire, same exact people saying exactly the same thing. I call Phoenix police and I go, hey man, I can see this is gearing up again. They're doing it again. That's when I found out that Obama was coming. That was Thursday, that he's coming on Monday. I didn't even know. And I go, look, okay, well, I'm going to bring my sidearm because a bunch of people are already doing it. It's already on the internet. We're bringing our guns and all this kind of stuff. I said, look, we're going to do it peacefully. I'm going to work with the Phoenix Police Department. We'll do the show live. Then Chris calls me and says, hey, I want to bring my AR-15. And I'm going, okay, man, you know, amp it up. You're on your own on that one. I'll interview you. He comes, black man with AR-15, and nobody got shot. I mean, you know, that's really the story. City of Phoenix protected our rights. We're all good. But it was amazing. I knew it was coming because Chris Matthews, you know, amped up that interview with Kostrick. You bring a JD gun to a riot. I mean, I'm going, wow, it's the same rhetoric of 13, 15 years ago, and they're going to do the same thing for the same reasons. It was coming.
What do you think they're going to do? I mean, I assume
They're going to find some, you know, like Pastor Anderson. I hate Obama. Well, that's always a great thing to say, you know, whatever. But anyway, so that he gives him a silver platter.
I think he called for his death, actually,
Well,
pray for how God takes care of it.
But
it's
anyway,
up to him. I'm not a supporter of that. We're in the Loveolution. You can't be in the Loveolution and hate people, you know? Even though we're, he was the guy that was beaten at a checkpoint, and we support him, for standing up for that. But the thing was is that he says this stuff. So, now they got him. Here's a guy that has 36 parishioners in a strip center in Tempe, and he will become the poster child of this effort to control people's thinking in opposition to what's happening.
Tell me more about that, because I want to know what you think is coming, what you're afraid of or concerned about or whatever.
You look at the 90s, exactly the same thing, exactly the same people. They will have you and friends will amp up this. There's a rise of the militia. The people are ready to rebel against, fill in the blank, and it won't be against tyranny. It won't be because they hate being taxed to death. It won't be because they're enslaving their children in the future. It won't be because of an unpayable debt and a destroyed dollar and them going to a world government and stuff. It won't be because of that. It'll be because they're white men with guns that hate minorities. And I'm going, seriously? And, and that's what Chris really stomped on him from. He's black. So I'm going, I don't know how they're going to do it. I tell you, if Chris wasn't black, this would have totally been a different thing. I mean, it would have changed the whole rhetoric on this. So I'm telling you, Heidi, from my perspective, this patriot kind of government too big thing never went away. They just kind of put it underground. They weren't allowed to have an open voice. And when they do have a voice, they always pick the stupidest one, the one that's, advocating hate, the one that's advocating death, the one that's going to, and then him and his 36 followers, are the center of the universe. And I'm going, you're missing the whole point when you got, millions of people going on just these Tea Party things, which in my opinion, they're astroturf. I mean, I'm with the left on that one because the left is the same way. I saw it happen at the Obama thing. These guys are all manufactured on both sides. But in the end of this healthcare debate, there is going to be a new bucket of money. They're going to create a new way to take your money and redistribute it. And I'm going, RD, it doesn't matter. It's all a distraction. But there are some people out there, the libertarian-oriented people, that know the problem is government. It is them expanding and taking over and stealing more. And there are people that go, look, at what point do you think that you can just enslave my future and that of my grandchild? I just had my first grandchild a few weeks ago, and she's got hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. And just a bailout was a big giant rock in her backpack of 30,000-40,000. And I'm going, when does it stop? And when I think I think it's time to start stocking up on ammo. And they go, then you're what? I'm what? Prudent? I mean, what do you think I am?
You're funny. Well, congratulations on the granddaughter.
Thank you. But, what should I do?
Well, I wonder, I hate, it's sort of your turn to ask a question, so I hate to say one more.
No, you can do
but
whatever.
But I wonder if you think any of this, you say there's a few, lone wackos in the movement, and you can find them in any movement and whatnot. But do you think any of this kind of anti-government hysteria in any way contributed to Oklahoma City or the recent string of events?
Me going on Oklahoma City.
Well, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
I'm a conspiracist, man. I think there were charges in the building. Heck, we had Rick Shiro was a BATF agent that did fire investigations and explosions for the BATF, testifying before Congress on Waco and all this other stuff. He lived here in Phoenix. He gave presentations. He goes, I was there. He goes, there were charges in the building.
Think the government blew it up itself?
I think there were more charges in the building. I know that.
Do you think the government blew it up?
I think there were more charges in the building. They lied about it. I can tell you that.
Well, what's the purpose, though?
Because they had terror crime stuff that they passed then. It's always about expanding more power. It happens with the Bush administration, and you'd be all over that. Oh, they just did all that. Look, they had the Patriot Act. Yeah, that was sitting on the shelf. They've been trying to get that during the Clinton administration. This is just, you go high enough up on the pyramid, it's the same people control both sides. This left-right thing, libertarians sitting, from the sidelines. We're like, hey, man, you're still voting? You think voting's going to make you free? You haven't been paying attention. So we're just wanting people to understand what they do with their freedom to act on the information is up to them. But We are definitely in the love-olution. We do not initiate force nor tolerate tyranny. It is you do not advocate for the initiation of force for political or social or economic gain. It always sends you down the dark side. That's why it's the love-olution. But the part of that love is I have for you. I'm going, Heidi, as you're doing all this, you know, take off these blinders. Quit looking at that one guy that they make a focus of on MSNBC, and you'll start looking at the culture that is permeating throughout this country, that people understand that something is wrong. And I tell you, oh, this is a good thing for you to understand. They had I had a revelation when I was at the Iowa straw poll, and I saw all these 20-something-year-olds by the hundreds, you know, thousands in support of Dr. Paul. And what I realized is that they had the same thing in common with the older and younger people. You know, they're 60, 70, didn't matter. They all just wanted the truth. But the reason you had such a large number for this 70-something-year-old man from, you know, congressional district in Texas that nobody ever heard of, nobody understood. But we knew. You know, we created the revolution here in Phoenix, you know, the logo and everything. We knew what was going to happen. There was never a doubt in our mind because these people understood what was going on because they were born after 1980 and matured along with the internet. They had what they perceived to be a truth button. And when they went and they found the truth and they were confident about it and they got vetted amongst themselves, peer-to-peer communication, they shared it with everybody. And this whole next generation coming up understands it's not their debt. They didn't do it. They are not going to be the slaves for the older generation that plundered this country and these companies and the government itself and municipalities and all this. We're in a whole new paradigm, and the Southern Poverty Law Center can be a good thing, you know, for all these people and this generation saying, look, let's not hate.
Well, that's what we're trying to say, Ernest.
Well, but, you know, focus on the right thing. I mean, it's always about, you know, it's a race thing. Libertarians don't see race. I don't care why you did it or who did it. You did it. That's a bad thing. Stop.
Well, I mean, I trust you and take your word on that, but a lot of people do. You know that. I mean,
but yeah, it's so insignificant. I mean,
I guess you wouldn't say that if you were black and you faced discrimination. You wouldn't find it.
No, I agree. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Or if you were that white kid who got the crap beaten out of him, right?
Yeah, damn Skippy. Yeah, he's taking, you know, you saw the black man up close right in your face. So I can understand, you know, we have a lot more in common than we do different, I'm sure. And we'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and we have online Southern Poverty Law Center Heidi Byrick. Now, Heidi, I did want to get, you know, after our conversation here, a summation of the Southern Poverty Law Center's position on, you know, what your mission statement is, and it always kind of comes around to the gun thing. It's always, there's a symbol of the white guy with the gun wearing an American flag T-shirt, you know.
And I don't agree with you, but go ahead. I mean, I've only got a few minutes left, so address that.
No,
I mean, it's just not true. What we're concerned about is domestic terrorism. We're concerned about hate crimes. And as I've said already, repeatedly, we don't have a position on gun control.
So domestic terrorism, what is that? What is domestic terrorism?
Domestic terrorism is when people take up weapons against the government and engage in an act that is a violent act, right? That is political.
Are they allowed to defend themselves? Because this is what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, if the government is, you're talking about if the government's assaulting someone, you're talking about like Waco.
Oh, yeah, no. I'll give you a perfect example of what's going to happen, in my opinion. One, Patrick Swayze just died. Really sucks. And they talk about every single one of his movies except Red Dawn. they're remaking that movie. That'll be interesting. Now, so what happens, it's kind of a militia thing. Soviets come invade and the people.
Yeah, I got it.
People rise up. They rise Plaza. Well, what happens is now you have, let's say they go galt. You know, it's kind of this Atlas Shrugged thing. They just say, you know what? I'm tired of being the productive person that's constantly being sheared, that is supplying the resources for all the people that are feeding off of me. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not even going to fight you. I'm just going to go sit on my can over here in the middle of nowhere, and I just want to be left alone, and you can die your own stinking parasitic death without a host. Okay? So they do that.
Who would have a problem with that? I mean,
see, that's my point.
Country.
That's my point. Well, it was kind of the Waco thing. And then you had the guys in Montana that were doing it. And you have all kinds of these religious organizations that, you know, Mormons do on the Lone Prairie or whatever. And they'll go there, and then here comes the government. They're going, oh, no, 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 no. You've got to be socially and economically engineered the way we want. They defend themselves. Are those people in your crosshairs?
Well, I mean, it depends to me on the situation. If people are committing crimes, and the government's coming in because crimes are being committed, or like, for example, with the FLDS, you know, the Mormon polygamists, if you're abusing young girls, well, I mean, I say the government should go in when you're protecting, you know, those kinds of rights. But if somebody is just off doing their own thing and they're not involved in criminal activity and they're, you know, not abusing, you know, whatever the case
Rainbow
might be.
People.
Well, I mean, it's a hippie thing, right? It's
yeah.
also a hippie.
You know, it's always, there's always somebody just wants to, there's those that want to be left alone and those that won't leave them alone.
I don't have a problem with that.
All right, cool. I'm going to be calling you.
Okay.
I'm going to say, hey, man, we just wanted to be left alone. They wouldn't let us. So I'm going to be counting. I'm going to be counting on you, Heidi.
All right. Count on me. You know where I am.
All right, cool. Well, I appreciate you spending time with us. I wish we had more that we could
and
go
as
some
I
more.
Said, I'd be happy to come back for another hour in the future.
Yeah, no. We'll do it. Something will come up. You know, something always comes up. You know, we'll try and get you guys, you know, get your mind right. You know, where you're looking at the principles instead of, you know, just trying to fill a stereotype for somebody that wants to give you money.
I think you're turning me into the special project there, Ernest.
Damn Skippy. Why do you think I had you on? Well, you know, I think, you know, a lot of the motivations for we just want, you know, justice. But when you start adding this social justice, then you got to define what the heck does that mean? You know, and it's always about using government force to redistribute, to kind of make things even. And I'm going, you always go down the dark path when you do that. Always. Stop.
I don't think you've completely converted your special project over here, but I appreciate you having me.
Oh, no. The government will do that. The time will tell. I just need you to understand me. I'm not going to try and change your mind. You know, government does that for me.
All right. Well, thanks. I really do appreciate it, Ernest. Thanks for answering my question.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Because, you know, what's her question? Where'd all the militia people come from? I go, I don't know. You're assuming they went away. They just don't get it, you know? And black people with guns now wanting less government. I don't know. What are they going to do? It hurts. Make it stop. Well, we'll talk about it more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence. I'm back in a little bit.